Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing though. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb and shit and have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, telling you, if I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Exciting broadcast, Dr. Mary Lee live coming from you from all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast. I'm Dr. Tatum, one of your hosts from California, and we have an exciting show lineup for tonight. We have special guest Dorian Harvey. He is the president of Detroit Association of Realtors, and also founder of African Town Associate USA. We're going to be talking about 400 years of black men, and that's going to be our topic. The music you just heard was by Dr. Cornel West on Hidden Beach Records, courtesy of first rapper was I Riz the Moment, my youngest son, and Rod Digger, Black Thought, and, of course, Dr. Cornel West. Music was produced by my oldest son, Corey Cote Tatum. Once again, you tuned in to Dr. Mary Lee Live, and we're going to be talking to Dorian Harvey. And also, later on, you probably hear from Dr. James Cannon. He is the father of entertainer Nick Cannon, who was the ambassador of the H.R. 1242. So right now, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Michael Tynes. He'll talk about our lineup tonight on Dr. Mary Lee Live. Michael Tynes, are you with us? And while we're waiting for Michael Tynes, and we'll see if Dr. Cannon is with us. Dr. Cannon, have you joined us yet?
Hey, this is Dr. Mary Lee. How are you doing, Dr. Tatum?
All right, Dr. Lee, so I guess you're in charge right now.
Well, I tell you, we always have to be ready for technical problems, and we're having them tonight. But I must say that I'm grateful and thankful for being here, and just overly excited about and also this, our his guest. Who are joining us tonight. We have a great VIP lineup, which includes, of course, Mr. Dorian Harvey, along with brokers and real estate business brokers, real estate brokers, financial institutions, investors, and builders and contractors, and all African American, all black who can help us to get done what we need to get done as a people. And we're just extremely thankful, for all of you joining us tonight. We are, we're going to move on until our situation, our technical situation changes. But, as we're looking, I do want to ask each of you who'd like to speak or have a question or comment to tap one on your telephone, and we will give you access to we'll open up your line and make your question or a comment. But tonight, Mr. Dorian Harvey was part of, along with Dr. Claude Anderson, I believe, and of course, you can correct me, sir, when you come on. Back in 2004, in the city of Detroit, they were working on building what was called African Town, and it stirred up a lot of racial tensions then, and even yet today, whenever you discuss building anything all black, it's a problem. And but we're the type of people who it's not in us to give up. They've tried to destroy us for so many, many years. And what I find so interesting, that aligns with our conversation tonight, just what, a few days ago, just very recently, Amber Ruffin, wanted to she went on and onto her show and talked about what we should know about black towns, and what struck me, just really struck me, and I can't even recall even in history or reading where there were so many black towns underwater. I do recall, cemeteries and, maybe certain areas. But, we have whole towns, that have been destroyed, not just the way Tulsa was destroyed, along with, they talk about Tulsa, but they don't talk about, include Detroit. They don't include what happened in Florida and Georgia. everywhere during that year, in certain particular times, additional cities that were black cities, Black Wall Street that was destroyed, you know, by fire, but bombed out. But even before then, cities were drowned out and continue to be drowned out and put underwater and displacing us, displacing our community and you know, by water, you know, some of these beautiful lakes, underneath those lakes, we will find, you know, our cities that have been destroyed. And so, you know, and we're denied so very much, and that's the drive. That's what keeps me going. That's my driving force behind all of this systemic racism. And I'm determined that we will, as a people, as one, do make some changes. And that's the thing that they're absolutely afraid of. They're afraid of unity by us, you know. The biggest problem they have is that, you know, it's keeping us separated, not coming together as a people, and reaching and rebuilding our own towns, our own communities. And it just really irks me how, when one person, you know, you find this black woman, forget, I think maybe she's in Georgia, you know, she purchased some land, and they're building homes on the land, creating a black community. Oh, such great big news, as if we've never done this when we built Egypt, when we, Kemet called Egypt today. And they've stolen and taken everything from us. There isn't one thing that's going on under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing that is in operation. There's nothing that we're using day to day, you know, whether it's designing, math, science, medical, you name it, that we did not create. And it's important for us to, you know, to come together and work with one another and just eradicate this poverty and crime and all of those things that are happening in our neighborhoods that's happening because it was all planned. It was all intentional. None of this is by mistake. And, you know, and I can't help but to touch upon the, you know, the COVID-19. And I trust absolutely nothing about anything that comes from that community, this conservative white community, this racist, this systemic racism that exists here. I mean, you can't shut your eyes on it. I can't. I cannot make excuses. And I cannot, you know, hold back you know, the history, the things that I learned, things that, you know, I'm waking up to daily. Thank you all for joining us. Without you, of course, it would not be a Dr. Mary Lee show. And I have no idea why we're having so many issues tonight. But we will continue on. So welcome. Welcome, welcome, Mr. Dorian Harvey. Are you there?
Dr. Mary Lee.
Hello, sir.
God bless you. Yes, thank you for
you.
Having me on. I thought I was left behind.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So
yeah.
Grateful and thankful, you know, that you're here. You have such a wealthy you know, rich, you know, all, so many years of background in what you do. Certainly admire your tenacity. You've continued on in spite of the what happened, you know, with Africantown in Detroit. You know, you've gone on right. beyond there and developed this Africantown Business Association, which I'm extremely excited about your sharing with our, you know, with our audience. And so I'm going to yield the floor to you. Just, you know, come as you wish, and, you know, we're just going to talk tonight.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. Hello to your guests and your panel. I've been checking your website out. I just want to say, where were you 30 years ago, sister? I needed you. I can honestly tell you that this was not by design. I did not come out of high school saying, hey, you know, I'm going to develop an Africantown. No, this was by need. This was out of a mm-hmm. desperate need. I knew I was not going to work for corporate America. But yet I was young and naive. So the Africantown that you see today, and anyone can visit our website, AfricantownUSA.com, has evolved as I have evolved. And I'm just so blessed that people, these last 4 years are proof that we need each other. If we didn't need each other before, yes. we definitely have learned how much we need each other today. And I knew this as a young man. I had this vision of Africantown. I woke up one evening. Well, actually about 3 a.m. I had a legal pad. I've been an entrepreneur all my life. You know, I just never mm-hmm. fit in. I didn't want to work for the plants. My grandmother would say, go get you a good job, you know, GM, Ford. You know, I'm from Detroit. And my mother mm-hmm. wanted me to go to law school. I said, no, I can't sit that long in a classroom. And I went into Morehouse College and had an awakening of my life. And I met some wonderful people, but I had some great, I learned more in the cafeteria mm-hmm. and on campus than I learned inside the classroom. And one of those things was there's people around the world that look like me. And very quickly I learned I was not a minority. And I learned mm-hmm. about my heritage. My Pan-Africanism evolved at Morehouse. And I brought that back to Detroit, and it's been tough. It hasn't been easy. One of the influences early on was Marcus Garvey, and then that led me to find a brother named Dr. Claude Anderson, who was mm-hmm. peacefully trying to live over in Washington, D.C., until I started blowing up his phone and shared with him that my people need to be able to feed themselves. So that blew up. And by the way, real quick, I just want to make a correction and update.
Take your time.
Thank you. I want to update my bio and my resume. At the time that bio that you were sharing with your listeners, I was the president. That was 2018. I was the president of the Detroit Association of Realtors. And how I became to get that is a story in itself. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. that was only lasted 4 years, and I'm believing that I made some impact with regards to home ownership, but that was only for a year. And currently, I am the president and CEO of my own brokerage firm, Team Harvey USA Realty. I've been a licensed realtor since maybe 27, 28. Prior to that, I was a Detroit police officer, and the crack epidemic was tearing our community apart. And I had a chance to either resign or be fired. So I chose to resign. I was knocking up too many young black boys. So that just opened the door for me. I just had a paradigm shift of thinking. I said, you know what? We need to create economic opportunity, and that's not a job. That's not a job. Jobs are fine. However, we need to be talking ownership. And so I left the Detroit Police Department and had a fortune. I had a very good mentor who happened to be a Jewish gentleman. He says, you need to own your own business, Dorian. I said, okay. He died before he told me or suggested what it should be, but he did leave me with the idea that I should sell what they do not manufacture any more of. And it was 6 months later, I was amongst at some sort of gathering, and I heard someone say, you know, they don't make any more land. And I knew immediately what my calling was. And I went and became a real estate agent. And since then, managed some big offices and started my own real estate brokerage firm here in the city of Detroit. So we specialize with passion urban real estate. I've done both commercial. I brought LeVan Hawkins to Detroit. I brought the first Flood Records restaurant when nobody wanted to do business in the city of Detroit. Nobody wanted to live in our neighborhoods. Our properties were undervalued. Our appraised, we suffered extreme racism with regards to appraised values of our real estate, which you know is one of the best or easiest mechanisms to build generational wealth. So that there I was on that journey and realized that we needed an African town. So today it evolved from trying to build it and find a location in the city of Detroit. Mind you, had no money. But I'm so naive. I'm like, hey, everybody's going to love this. This is like, you know, sliced bread. What fool would not support this? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And and to my youthful naivete, it was and it wasn't just folks that didn't look like us. Some of my biggest hurdles and obstacles were people that looked like me. And so I pressed forward and I got a partner. I learned how to collaborate. That's so important. I read that in your website. I see what you're doing. I learned how to collaborate when I didn't have the answer. I recruited a young brother. I got to give him a shout out. He may not be on this call, but he will make a great guest. His name is Terrence Willis. He was my first victim, I call it. He joined African Town Business Association. He had an IT company in Detroit, and he ran it out of his dining room, which now he has contracts all over the globe. But this brother got on fire and married an African girl that graduated from U of M, who introduced him to his father-in-law, who was a retired politician in Guinea. See that relationship building?
Right.
How powerful
right.
it is. And he ended up, his father-in-law flew in after Terrence shared our vision of African Town, met with me at the African Expo. I shared with him what we were trying to do here and the hurdles that we were going through and the money and, it's the same thing. And you know, I really thought that everybody was going to fall in love with it. I got phone calls threatening my life. It was an eye-opener, but I knew I was on to something. So anyway, Terrence's father-in-law, I can't pronounce the name, but bless his heart, he knows who I'm talking about. Sissoko, the brother went back and got the government to donate 30 acres of land. The deal was done overnight, and they started putting the amenities that we envisioned for African Town here. They started doing it with the kiosk rentals, a cafe, a movie theater, a 30-bed bed hotel, and it created an economy that affected many lives over there. They did that probably within about a year or 2 years. And then here we are, you know, five years later. I can't get it past city council, which leads me to why I brought Claude Anderson to Detroit. And you mentioned you remember this being in the news.
Yes, I do remember being in the news during that time. I wasn't in the state of Michigan. Michigan is my native, you know, state. I was born here, actually in the city of Benton Harbor. And
okay.
I do know and understand the challenges that were in Detroit and how, you know, there were continuous change, of course, with the change of mayorship and how things really did change once Mayor Coleman was no longer in office. But I do remember that. I do remember, you know, Dr. Claude Anderson's involvement and, you know, all of the oppositions, and as you said earlier, some of the main oppositions end up being our own people. And
can you believe
close
that?
To you sometimes. Yeah, exactly. and that's because, you know, one thing that we have a problem with is being teachable and following. You know, we seem to, they want to be a lot of chiefs, you know, and no students. And I'm a believer in learning. You know, I believe in lifetime learning. And I can literally, if I don't know a topic, a subject, then I want to learn from the best. You know, even if I know something about, investing or what, there's always more to learn. You know, there's always someone who knows more than you. And we have problems with that. And we tend to, you know, as a people, want to, we want to be in charge when we're not in charge material. You can't learn. You can't sit and take instructions and follow instructions. That's the beginning of being a leader. And then persistent. There are other things that go along with doing what you do. You had to get an office or you got an office. You went to that office whether you were doing deals or not. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I come up the hard way. I didn't know, you know, I heard of grants and didn't have money. You know, my credit was hit, right? But I learned how to cold call and I learned how to sell. But you're mm-hmm. absolutely right. It's going to require even our movements now that you and I are discussing that the 400 year movement, right? The 400 years that and I checked out their website. I want to give a shout out to the brother Dr. Rex Ellis. Doing the National mm-hmm. Returning Citizens, some of our most brightest, most intelligent, most fearless black men and women mm-hmm. are in prison. Mm-hmm. And that's by design, believe me.
Yeah.
So, but right. I appreciate that. I've been on both sides of that table, you know, helping brothers. I hire ex-felons today, right? I mm-hmm. pride myself mm-hmm. on creating jobs and economic opportunities for our community. But it's so much I want to share with you, Dr. Mary Lee. First of all, I just take my hat off. I can almost cry. But I'm just letting you know there has to be a meekness. We cannot mm-hmm. continue to meet pancake breakfasts, political mm-hmm. policies. I don't care how many political policies, committees that we create and so forth. That mm-hmm. is not going to solve our issues. That is not, nor are our issues going to be local. We must think global. We must reach out to the diaspora. I am in the midst of putting a group together right now. I am pressed upon my fraternity, Groove by Groove, with the help mm-hmm. of Terrence Willis, who mm-hmm. We both joined the graduate chapter of Groove by Groove here in Detroit together. As adult men, and gave them mm-hmm. our pitch about Africantown, and I'm proud to say that our fraternity has a chapter, two chapters, one in Ghana and one in Nigeria. We are not victims. We have to change that mentality. We are, and I am a biblical man. I believe that the word of God is the will of God, and it tells us that we are more than conquerors. So my attitude today at 56 is totally different, or my perspective is totally different than when I was begging for help from our politicians, and I'm talking Detroit politicians. You know, we've been black a long time since Coleman. Begging for help from the charitable, the nonprofit organizations, which I agree, we need them, right? However, those are not going to solve our problem. And you're right, meekness. We have to get meek. We have some of us have to be still. We have to get behind a vision. We have to and throw our resources at it, the best resources that we have. All right, I got the voting part. That's fine. But right now, when I first went after Claude Anderson, I read the book, probably did it in a day, Black Labor, White Wealth. The $7 billion that we were collectively spending as African Americans in North America was phenomenal. It came in fifth place behind several major countries, and that was Canada, U.S., and France. So that was the driving force for me to stay focused on Africantown. I said, if we could just collectively put that money together, right, we won't have to beg. We won't have to wait, I believe, in making decisions and you apologize later, not waiting on someone else to come along and say, well, you know, that's a great idea. We endorse this. Or, hey, wait, you know, that Africantown, that's not going to work. You're going to isolate people. You're going to make people feel less than. No, you just scared we're not going to spend our money with you. That's what that's all about. So we have to get meek. And everybody's not going to be meek. That's a blessing to be meek. That's not you don't automatically become meek. However, the meek will be the leaders. They will end up moving. We got a generation coming up, man, with this independent. I'm so proud of these young, both Detroiters, but these young black men and women that are visions. They're understanding the economy, economics. They're investing. Man, if I had these folks, man, if I, you know, now we got the internet, right? Oh, my God. But today we have the internet. So everybody, you know, I can see what folks are doing. You know, back then I didn't have access. I think we had to rent internet access. But today, if we could just get that movement, that black wealth movement, I know several churches are involved in it, and we don't need to lean on them either. There was a time that the church was our funding source, right? My great-great-grandmother told my mother, she shared with me. Now, listen, my great-great-great-great-grandmother couldn't read or write, sixth-grade education. I think she was born in slavery. However, she lived beyond the emancipation, became a housekeeper, saved up some money, listened to the conversations of this Jewish family, I think, down in Memphis, and they talked about how to finance, and one of the things was land contracts. And she was serving tables, raising their kids, and learned about land contract and left that family, came up to Detroit and purchased a home. I believe it was owned by a member, or at least it was in the farmlands of Joseph Campbell. She bought a home on a land contract and rented the rooms. I called it the first Airbnb. She rented the rooms to black folks who were leaving the South, coming up to work for Ford Motor Company in Highland Park. She sold sandwiches outside the gates at Highland Park, rented the rooms, ironed your clothes, did your laundry, gave you three meals a day, and she was the purest form of an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that evolve today. We're seeing these past 4 years, if that wasn't a wake-up call for us, I don't know what else it's going to take. And guess what?
Right.
That's not over. right? What we just experienced is coming back, right? So now is the time for movements such as the 400 Years of African American History Commission, such as the Neighborhood Commerce Institute. Now is the time. Listen to me. Mm-hmm. Listen, this is my heart. Now is the time for us to do this. And what is that? We got to support the black banks. We've got to build our global network. We should be negotiating with Nigeria. Some of the wealthiest people on the planet are on the continent of Africa. They need to know your name, my name, our bank. We need to have them involved in everything that we're doing over here in the United States, because we are not going to be saved politically, right? We are not going to be saved through policies. We can create committees. We can create 1,000 of these safe havens, right? But that's not going to save us. So I just take my hat off, and I'm here to serve. If there's anything I can do for you, sister, I am for it. And let me fast forward, update you. African Town has evolved into what's called an L3C. That is a mix. That is a mix of profit and nonprofit. That is, it has to be educational, but yet it can practice capitalism. And what we're doing with African Town L3C, it is. And I didn't see this coming either, but it's how we adapt to be relevant, and we're good at that. Mm-hmm. We are survivors. Nobody else could have survived the Middle Passage. Trust me, they would have been wiped out a long time ago. And we didn't end up on this land by coincidence, right? But we are a real estate development firm committed to empowering stakeholders in blighted urban communities around the USA. So for your listeners, I'm open. I just came back from Gary, Indiana. It will break your heart. Listen, and they're being gentrified daily. Folks from down from Chicago are buying up their waterfront property. They don't know what to do. The banks don't know what to do. The homeowners, if there are any left, Gary is where we were in the midst of the recession. However, we were able to solve it. Thank God for the help of Barack Obama and his team that he sent over here. We were able to create the Detroit Home Mortgage, which made up for the undervalued appraisals that our properties were getting, were receiving, just our neighborhoods, nobody else. Everybody else got, you know, very growing, stabilized appraised values in the midst of a great recession, but we got hit. We were losing our houses that were once financed for $150,000. They were selling them, foreclosing on them, and selling them for $10,000 and $15,000, knocking out wealth unbelievably out of our community, and nobody said a word, not even our politicians. You understand? They came late to the game, and the biggest argument was they foreclosed at tax values that should have been reassessed. So that was a class action lawsuit. Great job. Thank you, Lord, for opening some folks' eyes. But we lost a magnitude of wealth in real estate in the city of Detroit. And now there's urban areas that I went down to Biloxi, Mississippi. I looked at a neighborhood. Total neighborhood was damaged by Katrina. Every house is gone. All the families are no one knows where they are. However, they're selling these lots. They're selling these lots in these residential neighborhoods for $200,000-$300,000. Because now they have a view of the Gulf, mind you, although you have to look between the casinos. However, so this is real. This is real.
Oh, it's very, very real.
And we must do something about it. And I've got my solutions. I'm open. I'm still reading books. You know, I take my hat off to the I call them the old timers. I'm in that group too. We still playing 8-tracks, mm-hmm. but we've mm-hmm. got to support some of these young the IT wizards, right? First of all, mm-hmm. if you're not using email, we in trouble. You understand?
So
we have to raise up these young, aggressive visionaries. We've got to find funding for them. We need to be investing in them, and we definitely need more attorneys. I've learned that right. from my Jewish clients that I've served over the years. Get you some attorneys, start opening up some banks, creating loans for ourselves, for people, and definitely having the support of our diaspora. We have to reach out to brothers and sisters from other parts of the world. I like the continent of Africa. I think a lot of our solutions are laying on that continent. If our politicians, the first politician say, hey, listen, I think it's going to be Ortez. She's progressive. Mm-hmm. I like her. She ain't scared. But I think if first politicians say, hey, listen, we're putting together a group of us to go over into Africa. I'm joining. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe our solution is going to come from that continent. Because anything else is just a facade, right? Anything else is a facade. I'm not taking away from grants. However, they can pull grants anytime they want,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking away from loans. But remember, the borrower becomes a servant to the lender.
Yes, absolutely.
The borrower becomes a servant to the lender. So I either want to lend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or be in a position to lend money, and
we need to be able to be the ones to do the lending, because we're going to help one another much more so than they ever will, and so we must position ourselves. And this is what I'm doing at NCI, and it's completely brilliant in that you took that step to form an LC3. Because we can operate on both sides of the fence,
absolutely.
Per se. And that was a great idea, absolutely great idea. And I wish I
could take credit. That was nothing but God.
Exactly. And God leads us. The Most High is guiding us so much so, and because it's still that it's innate, We have inherited, our drive, our passions from our ancestors that continue to live within us. I'm as much of my mother today who's gone on as she was of herself, because, I find myself, doing things. Hey, this is what my mother used to do. We inherit our ancestors, and it's come down through us, and this is why we're not satisfied. We are not satisfied as workers, as employees, and this young generation, even more so, tell you right off the bat, I'm not working for no white man. How many times do you think I've heard that? And then they don't know how to do, and so we have to teach them, there are things old school that we come and we bring that balance, and it's very important that we don't discard them because of their, what some people might figure, their crazy ideas, and because they're not crazy ideas. We just need to be there in order to help them to develop those ideas professionally. So many of them are not going to go to these white colleges and universities because of the fact that they're waking up. So what does that mean? We must build our own schools. I mean, we're beyond time. Anyways, this whole school system was put in place for us to be, workers, to build their wealth, to here industrialized again, to build
education.
Their wealth. You see, miseducation. And this is why we don't even know what's going to, I don't even have any idea, you know, when I go back to this article, to Amber Ruffin, her sharing the fact that, you know, black towns are underwater. And I can't even remember, but there's just a large number of black towns underwater. And it was done intentionally. You know, our towns were flooded out intentionally. It was also a form of gentrification for these beautiful lakes. But you dive down, there are some that are still the houses, and much is still underwater. This is crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then they don't want us to build our own neighborhoods. You know, I mean, so foolish. They're so foolish. And I've been, too, you know, a part of the Congressional Black Caucuses and, the Tale of Two Cities. There was the Tale of Two Motor Cities. I don't know if you were a part of that, where, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus came in and there were discussions about the gentrification that's going on in Detroit. Well, I actually came in town to go and participate and be a part of that a few years ago. And, but I don't see anything out of it. You know,
hello.
They came here, they talked about it. Do you recall? And, you know, they brought you to
girl,
the table.
Listen. I've been sitting at the table. I was, I had to be 5 or 6 years old, and my mother was into the civil rights movement, and we sat in the basement of all the meetings around Detroit. I remember Wade Briggs. They called him Butterball Jr., and I was just a little boy. My feet wouldn't even touch the ground. The same arguments, the same conversations they were having, that was late 60s, early 70s, we're having them today. See, there comes a time where you have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And you realize that doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result is called what?
Insanity.
You understand? However, I understand what drives that, and it's fear. It's fear, and I had to overcome that too. You see, I remember the image of Emmett Till. I remember the image of Martin Luther when Martin Luther King was assassinated. You know what I'm saying? Everybody who tried to move us economically, even up to Reginald Lewis, that's his sickness. Even Ron Brown,
right.
I'm still suspicious of his accident. So those are embedded fears that we have. We need therapy.
Right.
Dr. Joy DeGry says, we suffer from post-traumatic slave syndrome. And I told Dr. Joy DeGry, I said, Doc, since you've identified it, come up with a treatment plan. Come up with a treatment plan. We could implement that in our own charter schools and start treating that illness from kindergarten, from the womb to the tomb, right? I could be stepping on some folks' toes. I apologize in advance.
No, don't.
But there is an embedded fear. There is an embedded fear. And it shows, it's apparent in the lack of advancement, the reason we're still talking about some of the same things we've been talking about for the past 10, 15 generations, right?
Right.
What they won't do for us, what we ain't got. So to your guests and to your listeners, we are gaining control of an identified area here. If anybody's interested in investing in real estate, and I'm going to do it in several other cities. Benton Harbor is on my radar. I know a beautiful broker over at Benton Harbor. I'll be going back to Biloxi. I got an agent that's old down in Oklahoma right now.
Okay.
Caring for her family. So, and I am reaching out to other brokers. If you're having issues that sounds similar or familiar to what I've shared about Detroit in this brief conversation, please reach out. You can, if I may give my information, is it okay?
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't pay for the advertising,
I'll be more than happy to write
you a check. But reach out to us. You can visit our website, www.teamharvusa.com. You can reach out to that website. We are quietly, see, I was naive 25, 30 years ago. I was naive. I was like, oh, we're going to buy up this neighborhood. And don't you know, nobody wanted to sell. The values went up overnight. So we quietly have acquired investors. I've talked to brothers and sisters from the West Coast to the East Coast. I got them flying in. Brothers and sisters from the continent. I brought in folks from Brazil. I brought in, I got a Cameroon brother who I got him into the adult foster care, and he's doing phenomenal, treating our people in the community with respect.
Great.
So reach out to me, anybody. We need to make this move, and we need to make it now because we're being gentrified. And if they can gentrify Detroit, you know they can gentrify Benton Harbor. You know they can gentrify Flint. Flint that is a whole show of itself right there, what happened to Flint. That gentrification, you know, usually is natural disaster, right? There's various forms of gentrification. Flint, just like our brothers and sisters down in Louisiana with Katrina, those gentrifications, and we can't forget them. We can't forget them. It may not be in the headline, may not be in the news, but we cannot abandon them. We're going to end up being tenants. At the rate we're going, we'll all be tenants renting from somebody who don't even like you. You understand?
For
anybody that wants to reach out, I'm still here. I've got a great team of real estate agents. I'm so blessed. They see the vision. I am a conscientious, compassionate capitalist, right? I believe in creating. I don't exploit. And I've got a great group of folks in my circle. My agents are just wonderful people. All of them are taking care of family. We all hire from the community. I pride myself, you know, out of Morehouse, they taught corporate philanthropy, and one of those was hiring from the community, right? Creating jobs for people that look like me. And I'm proud to say I think I've done, I can honestly tell God, Dad, I did my best.
You've done a tremendous job. You've done a tremendous job.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And what they have done, and I see that Dr. James Cannon has joined us. And Dr. Cannon, in just a few moments, I'm going to ask you to take the floor. But what they have done in our community, I've worked within this funding industry, grant philanthropy, for so many years, for 40 years, and helping really the white community to gentrify our community. You know, I've helped them, you know, and that's because it was my job to do it. I didn't have any choice, but, you know, to help them to take funds. And one huge fund is that CDFI fund, which I'm sure that you are aware of. And that's absolutely money that is never paid back, that's given, that's granted to the, to qualified or certified CDFIs to distribute, you know, by ways of loans or grants or other types of financing, all of our low-income housing tax credits, every type of funding source from the government, it's going to always be there. It's going to always be there. We must be set up in a way in every community, absolutely every black community, in a way to take advantage of this funding, because they're going to continue to do it. They're not going to stop just because we don't know what to do as a people. You know, And so in addition, right. and this is how we're going to, you know, regain the real estate, you know, get it back, because that is, you know, where our wealth is. And it's no if we do it or can we do it or how are we going to do it. It's just do it. It's just do it.
Right.
You do what your hands find to do. Whatever your specialty is, and I say this to everyone out here listening, whatever you love doing, whatever your passion is, that's what you're here on earth for. That's your calling. That's what you're here to do. And you do your part. I don't care if it's just talking. You know, you talk, you encourage, you inspire. You do those things. Your calling might be driving people to their destination. You do that. And who knows who you'll be driving. Things happen. This is how things happen. And we want to, we must. It's no, absolutely, we have no other choice other than to do what we're doing. Build our own schools. We do it. We're not going to be asking them, can we do this? No. You go into a city, you go into every city, you know, has already been zoned and been given, you know, permission to build certain things already. So go in there, do that. Find a school where you don't even have to ask for a zone change or any such thing. And just go in there. Already you can build a school. Already you can build a house, a medical center. Already you can build houses. You know, we don't need to ask them.
No, we don't need anybody's permission to take care of ourselves. And we have, that's a paradigm shift of thinking, too. And we got to let our leadership know that, too, that compromising. Mm-hmm. Every time we compromise, we end up at the end of the table or eating off the floor. I also want to let you know, I sit on the Chamber of Commerce for the city of Highland Park, which I market the city of Highland Park as the gateway to downtown Detroit, the heartbeat of the city of Detroit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I sit in the midst of a lot of real estate mm-hmm. opportunities that may mm-hmm. not be around in 5 to 10 years. And I understand the obstacles. Yes, the Community Development Financial Institution Fund. You need this. This should be a whole show in itself.
Oh yeah.
Right. A lot of folks don't take advantage of it. Don't know about it. Don't understand
don't
it.
Know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's money
that's
available.
Yeah. Yeah,
there you
that's
go.
What neighborhood commerce is about, and we're going to build CDCs, and we'll share this plan with you. But our co-host Michael Chimes is having some difficulties, but he can hear us, but he cannot speak, and we're sorry about that.
Good.
But he does have a question for you. Then we're going to go to Dr. Cannon. And his question is, if you haven't already provided clarity on this matter, he's wondering how sick loan discrimination is for success in real estate. That's part of the question. So how significant is bank loan discrimination? And then the next part of the question is, go ahead.
Let's say significant up to a point, and here's why. I learned very early on in my real estate career, servicing the market that I was servicing that was underemployed, undervalued, and we could not count on the banks. So what did we do? We did the same thing my great-great-grandmother did with the Joseph Campbell family in Detroit. We bought on land contracts. So I learned these creative ways of how to gain ownership or control of real estate. You don't always have to have the deed to own and control and occupy and create cash flow on real estate. That's a myth. It's good to have, however, but if you can't get the deed, so what we did land contracts and lease with options. Now, because of the gentrification and those of us who were able to weather the storm, the banks are throwing money at us. Why? Because the value of our real estate has finally reached where it should have been 20 years ago, you know, 50 years ago, right? 1968, the riots of Detroit. We have, our values did not progress from 1968, the riots. And they went further south. Our values went further south during the Great Recession, which, by the way, Detroit was in the Great Recession 2 years before the banks closed in New York. So, you know, everybody knows. We were in recession. They weren't loaning us any money. They froze all of our. So I can answer that question. It is significant today. However, it's not the only way. And there are folks who have weathered the storm, like myself in real estate, who can teach and show people how to gain control of the real estate. And then, of course, the banks will come calling and knocking on your door because they want to borrow. What they want to, that's how they make money, is loaning money. And if you've got something like
and
an
And then
asset,
once you build some equity,
estate,
once you've got equity in
there
the
you
property,
go.
Yes. And even
cash,
on the
cash
land
out,
contract.
Get rid of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And the first home, speaking of land contracts, the first home I bought was actually on a land contract. And,
absolutely.
And now, and I'm going to say this, and we're going to get back to those rest of the question. And one thing, when you do buy the land contract, or even with your lease, the options, you can record
right.
those. They won't tell you that you can record those with the register of deeds, and that protects you when you record them. And
absolutely, we call it a memo.
Yes.
A memo. Absolutely. Yeah. And I built a great portfolio. Never took never had any of the deeds in my name. I built a great portfolio, cash flow, and kept it moving. But so I hope I answered that question. But we do, you know, it helps us.
So how important, part of that question also is, how important are loans, and do you feel that the loans help other races be successful more than black loans?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's, you know.
Because they're not going to send you through all the red tape for one thing, and then they'll even, see, they can relax their requirements. So I was a loan officer and a mortgage loan officer. I've been a licensed realtor. And so they can relax, make exceptions where they want to and who they want to with. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and
they
that's,
do it all the time.
They do it all the time. And listen, I can honestly tell you, you know, you want to see corruption, you know, watch the real estate industry. It's not the cleanest thing, but it's a mechanism for us to build some wealth and educate our next future generation. You know, it is a tool. It's a tool. So I've seen, you know, I've seen our appraisals. I've seen it all,
and I've seen,
you know, because I was able to present a particular buyer in such a light that they couldn't tell who they were. They approved the loan, and this individual buyer shouldn't have got one. So I've seen it work against us as well as for us too, depending on how we package ourselves and understanding that money. We need our, first of all, stewarding the money. We must learn how to steward our money. But understanding it is key. We need to have financial literacy from kindergarten, you understand, to you graduate from high school. So, the banks are a significant part of us obtaining real estate, but it ain't the only way. And that's what we can be proud of. And we don't need to talk about it in front of everybody either. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. I'm very conscious of who I'm talking to. Understand I have a code of ethics. I abide by the fair housing. However, I know who calls me. When I get control of real estate, I know who calls me looking for real estate, just like I know who I call saying, hey, listen, I got a house for sale or I got a building for sale. I need you to take a look at it. And that's why I'm on a drive recruiting real estate agents now in my market that look like us. I need more of us in this business. This is a multi-trillion dollar industry. And we're not even a portion of a fraction involved in it. Even our wealthiest landholders here in the United States are considered crumbs when we look at the bigger scheme of real estate. That's a great question. However, it's not the end all. Can we function without the bank? Yeah, we can function. We can start financing on our own, right? We can create our own RIC, real estate investment trust. You've got Nick's dad involved, you know, that his whole circle. I have gone after, you know, look what Tyler Perry is doing down there. Hey, look, who just partnered up with Tyler? Somebody just partnered with Tyler. They bought hundreds of acres. Did you see that was, headline?
That was Bishop.
T.D. Jakes.
Yes.
If we start making moves like that.
Right.
If we start the Oprahs and LeBron, oh man, talk about progressive, right? That helps us. That helps us, and we can start funding our own deals, start financing our own folks, doing joint ventures and partnerships, mergers and acquisitions is how I'm trying to retire. I'm looking at other brokerage firms, smaller brokerage firms. You know, most real estate brokers from the urban area, they retire broke, they die broke, believe it or not. Yeah,
right.
That's true. That they don't
absolutely
have to do. And
I'm
spearheading that drive to get more of us to combine our brokerage firms so that we too can be a Keller Williams, a Century 21.
That's what we're working towards. Okay, we have, I know we have, I don't know what happened to him. We had.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Dr. Cannon, you're still there?
Yes.
Dr. Cannon?
Yes, our conversation, I appreciate it so very much. And my brother, you're definitely right. You know, I think we did not get our share of fair real estate in this property, in this country. I think we're lagging way behind. I think it's a real-life monopoly game that's being played, and everybody else is going around and around and getting paid, and we're just standing back watching. But the beauty of it is because we've been watching, we can understand this game. It's not difficult for us to understand that real estate, they're not making no more dirt, and we've got to be able to control some of the real estate that's already out there. One of the things I was interested in is in developing. It's amazing that there's a lot of vacant properties across the country and in a lot of our cities, and properties that's been vacant for years. And I think what it takes, number one, is vision. Vision to be able to see a vacant lot or vacant 20 acres or 10 acres or 2 acres, and being able to see vision for those acreages, and then being able to have the wisdom, like Dr. Mary Lee, to be able to talk about how we get financing to be able to put up our own projects across the country.
Yeah.
And when I say projects, I don't mean in the sense of stuff that's dilapidated, but I'm talking about this beautiful, gorgeous property. If our kids could fall in love with building, if we can get them excited, you know, to go back and understand what it takes to be an architect and want to build again, construct again, to use their hands and their minds and be able to read blueprints, it's definitely a beautiful thing, sir, to be able to get involved with real estate and be able to sell the hundreds and thousands of properties, millions of properties that's already out here. And I think you're absolutely right. Our children and our young people need to invest some time in learning that trade, learning that they could become a powerful salesman and saleswomen, and then live in great properties at the same time. I would like to see, sir, we've been working with young people with media and producing media, internet shows. I think it would be powerful to have shows up across the country with young people talking about real estate, talking about, you know, how to get into the industry of real estate. You know, my favorite realtor, to be able to have real estate shows across the country where young people are participating so that they can hear and understand, they can learn the lingo and the language of real estate. Because, again, like you said, I think we've been left behind, and it's a shame because we've been here for 400 years. We should be the number one holders of property in this nation. If not number one, we should be number two. We should own more property in this nation as Afro-American, Negro, Hebrew people than anybody else in this country. So I would submit, sir, any way that we can do some shows together. We can get some young men across this country from doing weekly shows talking about real estate up under your tutelage. I'll go get the young people. If you show up, Dr. Tatum and I will bring them to the platform so that they can learn at your feet, so that they can be mentored, so they can get some hand-me-down knowledge, so that they can learn from somebody that's willing to pour into them like yourself. I, too, will sit in those classes, sit at your feet, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on our show today. Really it is, to be able to synergize with us, to be able to get these entertainers, just like you said, to pull their resources together and put it in some trust across this country so we can create wealth. It's a pleasure to have you on this show. Really it is.
When you think about, Dr. Cannon, good to hear you.
Yes, indeed. When you think about powerful men like Bill Cosby, who's just been released, we've got, or with the potential of being released, you know, somehow we've got to be able to get our old men together with these young men. So they want to lock these old men up, throw away the key, and humiliate them before the world so their wives don't want to listen to them and their children don't want to listen to them no more. But, you know, they've got a lot of wisdom. And Dr. Cosby has a lot of wisdom, and he's just one. You know, so I think as we talk about the power of men being in entrepreneurship, taking the lead as God would want us to, we can't forget that there's some traps and there's some pitfalls out here to bring strong men down. If we remember the story of Joseph in prison, who was a good man, had an excellent spirit. But that brother was brought down by somebody that was willing to tell a lie on him and have him sent to prison. So we know it will happen. We've got precedences in our history where good men have been brought down, you know, by some of their folly, some of giving a little bit too much to drink, a little bit too much to a party. Spending their money unwisely. So we have to eat some of that, and we have to walk circumspectly, but we cannot forget that there's pitfalls and there's traps. There's people sitting in and waiting for us to stumble so that they can, you know, even make up lies to bring a good black man down. So, sir, we appreciate you, and we hold up your hands, and we want to hear your voice even more. Amplify what you're doing. We could do shows just like we've done with Dr. Mary Lee and push your voice into the voice of these young men around the subject of owning real estate and selling real estate, understanding the market of real estate. I didn't have a question, sir. I just wanted to come in and commend you, and you stirred me up. I haven't talked about real estate in a long time, but it's time for us really to turn our attention back to that industry. So I just wanted to say I appreciate you, Dr. Lee. I appreciate your guest tonight.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon. Mr. Harvey. Mr. Harvey, are you still there? Okay, what's going on here? Okay.
Yes, girl. I was on mute. See, I'm still playing 8-tracks. See, this technology,
okay.
Right? I'm still trying to figure this stuff out. But listen, that touched me. That was a sermon. I love you for that, Dr. Cannon, and I respect you, brother. I really appreciate it. I never, ever imagined that I would be the subject of the conversation. And it just,
okay.
I'm just all honesty. I never thought that. This was not, I was not seeking to puff Dorian up. You know, I'm just a humble brother who is proud to be an African born in the United States. So Malcolm says, hey, listen, just because a cat gives birth to a kitten inside of a junkyard oven doesn't make the kitten a muffin, right? And that came later in life for me, you know, reading the books and learning about who I was. I spent the early part of my life trying to figure this stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
But more importantly, brother, we must do something with this. I don't want to continue. I'm like this. I can show you better than I can tell you. That's where I'm at in my life. I was mentored by a beautiful woman by the name of Maxine Powell. She taught all the Motown artists how to move with grace as if they were kings and queens. And she would tell me, Dorian, don't you die here in this city with your vision. She scared me when she said that. She said, don't die here with your vision. If you have to go somewhere else, go. But don't die here, because there's many of songs unwritten in the cemetery. That's the richest soil in the world. Many of movies that were never produced. Many of books that were never written inside of our cemetery. Do you understand? So to hear you acknowledge that, and this is something simple, you know, I'm not a advanced educated brother, the foundation I had, thanks to my mother, was a decent education, but more importantly, I learned from the life, living this life. And one of the things I recognized very early was, We must own. And so that changed my thinking. You know, not to pride myself in the label that I wore, but to pride myself in how many newspaper routes can I cover out in Southwest Detroit? I sold penny candy to the Catholic school boys and girls as I walked through the door. I sold Amway. Yeah, I went around and showed my marketing plan. I sold fire extinguishers on the side while I was at Morehouse College. And I recognized very early I can make more money selling for myself than working for who was trying to hire me, MCI, all these corporations that came down to Morehouse trying to recruit us, you know? So real estate was the best thing, I think, and it still offers a great example. Although now I listen to a guy named Jack Alibaba. Just listened to him today on YouTube. It might have been a TED Talk, the owner of Alibaba from China. And now with the internet, right, we can do a virtual African town where we feature these young entrepreneurs moving products from China, from Africa, out of Europe. You can open your own business right now in your pajamas with your house shoes on if you have a computer or a mobile phone. So there's no excuse. I challenge everyone on this phone call. Open a business, whether it makes it or not. Open a business or nonprofit. And now we've got people like you, Dr. Mary Lee. I didn't have you. Nobody was telling me, well, you know, you can get a grant. Well, you know, there's some money available over here. Nobody was telling me that. So I dialed for dollars. I had a mentor. His name, I'm going to give him a shout out. I don't know if he's on this call. Richard Session down in McKinney, Texas, right out of that Dallas-Fort Worth area. He was one of my first brokers. He said, boy, there's something in you, Dorian. And he started telling me you're going to have to learn the sales skills. You're going to have to take classes. You're going to have to go to seminars. We didn't have webinars. I tell my agents, you all got it so lucky. You can just dial on the computer. I had to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to go to a seminar, and you had to network, and you had to get in your car. But this brother told me, he says, he would have dialing for dollars, and every evening he would buy pizza, and Lord know I needed it. I had no groceries at home, and I would stay for the pizza, but I end up dialing and prospecting on customers and clients. I ended up making 50 to 100, your fingers would hurt. We had the push-button phones back then. And he built that confidence. A business will build confidence. Mm-hmm. And I succeeded. I became the number one salesperson in his office. He owned a franchise by the name of Red Carpet Kime. I was the top selling and listing agent in our board of realtors, which at that time was South Oakland County Board of Real Estate Agents. But those skill sets, nobody taught us that in school. That's the gist of how to build your business. Now the money will come, right? The money will follow. Mm-hmm. But you got to have those basic sales and marketing skills. And I'm not talking about marketing 101 from your average university here in the United States, because what they don't consider is the psychological boycott that you're going to suffer as a black business owner. There are people that will not do business with you because of your skin color. Can you believe that?
That's right.
Can you believe you could have the best product in the world, right? You could be the most talented at what you do. There are people that will not support you because of who you are. And they don't teach you that in marketing and economics in college. I know. I sat in that class. That was the most interesting class to me. They don't show you that out of this population, you could have the cure for cancer, right? But if you, they designate and find out who you are, there are people who will avoid you. They will die with cancer because you're the one that's selling it. The cure.
Absolutely.
So you can't compare us. You can't use national statistics when it comes to a black-owned business. So we must support each other. Please, folks, we must support each other. And Dr. Mary Lee, we must have resource seekers and advisors like yourself. I need you right now for African Town L3C.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. We're on board 100%. There's no question about it. We do need each other. And I remember those marketing classes as well, where you can, when you were 10% of 10% of how many you reach out to, and you can book on that. That doesn't work for us.
No.
It does not work for us. And their target market, their target market is our community. I mean, I've sat in many meetings where I would be the recorder, because of my shorthand, back in that day, your typing skills and your shorthand skills could get you into the boardroom for taking minutes. I would be I consider myself the invisible person, because they would talk about literally anything black as if I wasn't there. And, I heard these plans go forward, for our communities. I was in the boardroom when they planning was going on in the various chambers of commerce, sending assembly, and to China, out of our communities. And I was in the boardroom when they were planning to bring the beauty shop supplies, with China, with the you know, Chinese, Asian, you know, into our neighborhood.
Yeah.
When they were planning the Arab gas stations and the corner liquor stores and all of that, they brought them here in masses. You know, they literally recruited them with funds that were supposed to build up our communities, that were supposed to be given to our black citizens, you know, within the neighborhood to build them economically. But no, they brought them in, and of course, you know, for the taxes and to control. So it's all always been completely, you know, by design. It's been totally by design. And I'm totally by design as well, okay? And so we know what to do, and we're going to do it. Your association, your African Town Association, what states are you in so far, or how many of them?
Right. Sure. Right now we're in Michigan.
Okay.
But I'm open. You know, we need chapters in every urban community throughout the United States. However, I can't do it by myself. So,
absolutely.
I would love to talk with some folks who are economically concerned with our existence.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we've got many battlefronts. And what happens is oftentimes we turn to our generals, you know, our seasoned soldiers, and we put all our battles on them. And that's not fair. That's not fair.
Right.
But so I'm not, I don't, you know, I tell people, listen, I can't be a social worker and try to battle this. However, I might know a good therapist, right? But more importantly, we have to get laser focused. We've got to identify our human capital, those with the skills, abilities, or with the funding, the financing. And then we deal with these battlefronts. So yeah, I would love to talk with folks about and I know that there's organizations out there doing what I'm doing. I know I'm not the only one. I know. But
no,
maybe
but
we can come
we're
together.
We're about to be the most powerful. With that, we're going to go to 269-3052. You are live. 3052, you're live. Area code 269-3052. You are live.
Yeah, thank you very much. Question. Now, one, Dr. Claude Anderson made it very clear going over history that all the whites who came over here were given these lands, where the African or the descendants of enslaved Africans were excluded from that land. We also know that the policies of the redlining and the banks. But in particular, if we just focus on a small city like Bend Harbor, where you have a white chamber of commerce called Cornerstone Alliance, and any time an investment opportunity is done by African Americans, that has always been shut down. So the point of the question is that, one, you said you have to do this clandestine because Dr. Claude Anderson came into Detroit with your Africa Town or Little Africa, and, you know, Kwame Kilpatrick, all of those things were attacked. Kwame went to prison. So there's always retaliation for any time African-Americans try to become independent because everybody, as Claude Anderson said, need to spend our money. So they need the African-American dollars to support them because they use a small percentage of their wealth and 100% of our wealth to maintain and establish their businesses. So how are we going to battle, one, that those systemic racism practices are still there in the state of Michigan? The governor has three programs that were set up, and that the black people are scared to tell white people about their racism or racism, and these are your black leaders. And that Claude Anderson pointed out that they tend to, white people pick black people that don't like black people. White people pick black people or like black people that don't like black people, and you've already said that, experienced that. So how are we going to break through with our own black people who have been thoroughly brainwashed and trained, these white organizations that these commerce organizations to be on the lookout to shut down black enterprises? And Carl Anderson had pointed out that in the 1960s, you only had 103 black politicians, and then in 1990, you had over 9,000 and are in a worse state. So having black politicians is not the key, because they haven't done anything to help the black community. So these challenges are there. So how are we going to overcome these challenges of the black politician against us, because they want to get reelected and they love white more than they love black? How is it the institutional structures that are there with racism, and we're only just now getting black banks to do that? And you got to go against the political governments like the Detroit City Council, like the commissions and things to make this happen.
Outstanding. Can I jump in on that question?
Well, that was directed to the guest, and then you can come in after the guest speaks, please.
Absolutely.
Okay. Maybe tomorrow.
All right, that's a great question. I think I mentioned earlier, brother, I appreciate you covered a lot, but and I'm going to try and summarize. How do we advance with the mentality of certain black folks? Well, you know, listen, Harriet Tubman said, I could have freed 1,000 more if they only knew they was if they were enslaved. You remember that? You heard that?
Yes.
Everybody ain't coming. You understand? And you can't expect everybody. But what can you do? That's the key. And that's why I went after Claude Anderson. Only time I stood in front of city council in the city of Detroit, I was fighting against a major black church. Here's the deal. The church bought a old hospital, prime real estate inside of a neighborhood, one that I grew up in. And they were in negotiations to bring a retailer by the name of Kmart to this prime piece of real estate that sat within 50 yards, 60 yards of residential single family houses. You with me? And I, with my little crew, those who were on board with African Town, stood up in front of this huge, I'm not going to mention the name, this huge church that wore these t-shirts that said something about Kmart. Now, imagine that. That's like David and the Philistine, the giant. You know what I mean? I felt like David. I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have the influence, right? I didn't have this big mega church behind me. You know, I had about 9 or 12 people that were committed to black economics, but I'm standing in front of a black city council as I'm arguing, saying, "Don't do this, because you're going to damage our real estate value, and this is the only wealth mechanism. We can't count on life insurance. Most of us can't afford it, or we don't take it out, but this is our only wealth mechanism that we have, and you're going to devalue an already undervalued subdivision here in the city of Detroit." And guess what? Nobody heard me. However, it didn't stop me. You understand? Yes, we can do it. We don't need anybody's permission. We got to get rid of that mentality. Brother, I am putting together investors now, and we are strategically buying up a community very quietly, right? I don't yell and shout African Town anymore. I don't do that. I learned my lesson from that. That just made the climb of the mountain even higher. It made the hurdles even taller, right? It hardened the doorways. But more importantly, we can do this. We've done it before. I mentioned earlier, my great-great-great-grandmother told my mama, I don't think this integration is a good thing. And didn't she end up owning more real estate than any of her her grandchildren up until this generation? You know, you count that. She ended up owning and controlling more real estate with a sixth-grade education, nobody's permission, no policies from the politicians, no endorsement from the churches, right? She ended up owning real estate. So, yes, we can move forward. And, no, everybody is not going to give us a pat on the back, a kudos, congratulate. You will not get a standing ovation. If you're trying to improve black economics and you think that everybody's going to jump on board and give you a standing ovation and give you the Medal of Honor, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. But, my brother, and I love you, I understand your conversation. I once thought it myself. I had to have a paradigm shift in my thinking. We can do this. You find enough Mary Lee, Dr. Mary Lee. You find enough Dorian. You find enough Dr. Tanners. You find us. We're here now. Look, we're on the internet, right? I didn't have this access, but I found Claude Anderson. I read the book, right? I was inspired by Reginald Lewis. I followed Ron Brown. There were a few other up-and-coming black entrepreneurs. I mean, the Johnson story was a motivator. The Ebony, the Johnson Publishing. How he borrowed, or you don't have to go far. You've got tangible results, historical records, such as a Berry Gordy. And you know how many people, Berry Gordy was threatened. Berry Gordy, nobody, none of the Jewish and Italian record labels wanted a Berry Gordy. No. No, and you'd be surprised how many black folks didn't support Berry Gordy. That's a great history lesson. If you ever get a chance to take the tour at the refurbished Motown Museum in Detroit, please take it. Please take it, because these are stories that can motivate you. We are not victims. We are more than conquerors. And if you have to start off with a lemonade stand, damn it, make the best lemonade you can. Yeah, you with me? That's how we have to have that attitude. I owe nobody an apology. I belong in this space and in this time as much as anybody else on this planet. And with that empowerment and knowing my creator, who is the creator of the heavens and earth, you can do all things. Trust me. So, yeah, we're going to have the politicians. Don't rely on them. Yep, the black church has got an agenda too, and I know I step on toes. I'm not always the most welcome inside of those buildings. However, this is my life, my children's life, and my grandson's life at stake, and this is no game. So yes, my brother, what can you do?
Do you help establish underground black chambers of commerce, to stay underneath the radar of the white chambers of commerce who will send blacks or send whites to sabotage?
That's a great, the strategy, I'm not the best strategist. However, I am on a chamber of commerce. I mentioned that earlier in our call, and I got a great leader. Over at the Chamber of Commerce, Highland Park, and we're not making fanfare. We're just getting things done. We have on the table now a charter school that will have satellite conferences with universities from around the country and overseas. So you're absolutely right. Now, You have to move forward. You're going to make noise. You can't completely stay off the radar. However, but by the time you become a bleep on that radar, I would believe that you are heavily funded. You got some good attorneys, right? And what you're doing is totally for the good of the community. That way you've got the community's buy-in. If anybody does turn against you, they're obviously an enemy of the community.
All right, thank you.
Beautiful, and if I could jump in real quickly to our guest and the brother that called in, if he's still on the line.
Yes, go ahead.
I know you call in every week, and I appreciate you so much, and you bring so much to the show. Could you go ahead and share again your name, and can you give us a couple of solutions on that topic as well to add into the conversation? Could you give us some of the solutions that you see that can help us pull together?
Okay. All right. This is Reverend Dr. Don J. Horati Tynes. I'm a professor in Detroit at the Wayne State School of Medicine, and I'm also the public health director for the city of Benton Harbor, and I also work for the governor. And the solutions are, one, what we found is that when individuals start to get a correct identification of history, then they start developing the courage to be unapologetically black, and those who actually do more research become unapologetically African, and then those like the brother who's speaking tonight and myself, then we become unashamedly pro-black. So in the city of Benton Harbor that I've spoken those specifically, that we had to develop a black chamber of commerce that was underground, because the blacks who would join would go back to the white chamber of commerce and block real estate opportunities and to that effect. And therefore, you have to get a group who has a little bit of a track record of being pro-black. Your guest, Michael, always talked about work with those who are interested and not the uninterested. So the black identity or the black history also weeds people out who are not really interested in knowing about the Malcolm X and the Marcus Garvey. Those seem to be dirty words to those individuals, and those which you want to use to help drive people away who are not have the best intention for the black community. So Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Jomo Kenyatta, Patrice Lumumba, Julius Nyerere, those individuals who brought about freedom. Now you have Julius Malema, and today you have a brother named Makala. So those names, and looking in that direction, would also reach out to the younger people, because the younger people are watching the older people and have said in Benton Harbor very negative things. They've actually prophesized maybe 2 years ago that the adults' main focus was going to be on marijuana, and first getting medical marijuana as a pretext to get the recreational, and they didn't fight for the children to have summer jobs or education, and that's the result. And you'll see that in Detroit, the black adults follow that pattern. They didn't fight for the kids' African education, certification. They fought for marijuana. They didn't fight for the black kids in Grand Rapids, and now they have a gang problem. They fought for marijuana. And so our priorities as African-American adults, because we didn't identify with the historical freedom fighters like Harry Tubman, that we went into that problem. So the solutions are, one, we got to find people who are, again, African-centered. Two, that they have to build the courage up to be pro-black. And like I said, the governors, their black members threatening to get off the anti-racism teams, because they don't want to hurt the relationships of white people. There's like, you know, some of these white people have been good to me in the past, but you're not talking, that's you personally, but not talking as a race in general. We're the only group of people who do not think race first. Every single population on the face of the earth thinks their race first, except us. The only, you know, the Nigerians do have a problem. Very few of them think Africa first or black first. They think more Britain first or European first. But as the gentleman said, you're going to have those groups, but Nigerians were really colonized. And colonized means slavery at home. So colonization means being enslaved in your own house, being enslaved where you don't own your own land, you don't even own your own house, you don't even own your own working force. Our brothers and sisters, that's what they were. They were enslaved at home where we were enslaved across the seas. And so we got to have that communication. And I also let you know that those Africans, speak negatively about Africans in America, about African Caribbeans, but all of that is taught by the European oppressors or enslavers called colonizers or whatever you want to say. So when we speak on these black terms, it makes people think it's not important, and that's how you know who shouldn't be in your group. And when you speak of these black terms, it makes some people uncomfortable, so that's how you know not need to be in your group. So like minds have to come together. We have to make sure that it's all ducks in the room and not chickens trying to pretend ducks, because a duck can take a shot, but a chicken could just flap his wings and just do the same old thing. So I think that's it. So unity based on a common goal, common objective, and it has to be pro-black. It has to be unashamedly pro-black. It has to be unapologetically black, unapologetically African, because we got to unite with the brothers and sisters over there. And so that's it. And that those individuals, we have to understand that they have been brought up to be pro-white subconsciously or consciously, and we have to kind of work with them, nurture them, but understand that they will run back and accidentally sabotage us, because that's the training. That's what your Dr. DeDori said. We have suffered from post-traumatic slave disorder. That's just a fact. We cannot have been through this for 400 years. So being, when you know your history, you know your greatness. When you know your history, you know your greatness. When you know your history, you know your greatness. And Malcolm X said it, history best rewards all research. History best rewards all research. So knowing the correct history, coming together with a common mind and objective based on that history, that means you have a common oppressor, a common enemy, and that you have to develop the love for yourself, the love of things that are black, love of things that are African, what every other group do. And then understand that there's always going to be retaliation. There's always going to be retaliation. The Civil Rights Bill was produced by whites and Southern whites, and what they did is that they added white women and made them a minority when they are a numerical majority to take away the civil rights that blacks are supposed to get. So there's always going to be a pushback because of the George Floyd death and systemic racism as a public health threat and a public public crisis. They gave you, within a few days, they gave you a national holiday called Juneteenth. You didn't have to go through what you did with the whole Martin Luther King. So they're always going to be that push and pull. So we have to, and that's what I'm saying, is the countermeasures, knowing that as you move something forward, there's going to be retaliation. The retaliations against in Detroit with Africatown, even though Claude Anderson came in there, retaliation big time against Kwame Kilpatrick, because he would have blocked the taking over of the riverfront. Thank you.
Real quick, outstanding, my brother, and I. We apologize for not, you know, I appreciate your wisdom for not giving more of time, you know, to dialogue, making you permanent on the show. We appreciate you so very much, your wisdom, my brother. Really, we do appreciate you listening and adding everything. But I want to the panel, to us today, I want to ask the question around entrepreneurship as a solution. One of the things I noticed, Nick Cannon being my son, noticed what they do with the entertainment industry. They utilize foundations, but it's not the foundations of the entertainers or the celebrities. They don't want the entertainers or celebrities their own foundation. They want them to give their money, their millions, their 10 and 20% over into white foundations that's already set up. I've seen that myself. I've witnessed that myself. So imagine the hundreds and thousands of celebrities and entertainers that have no foundation. If you look at the Carnegies and the Hunts and the Rockefellers and the Fords and the Clintons, the first thing they did was set up foundations. And they brought their families into those foundations. And they ran those foundations and raised millions of dollars. They did their entrepreneurial thing or their political thing or whatever they did. But it appears that a part of controlling the wealth and keeping the wealth in their community, in their families, they do it by erecting foundations. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation. So the question I'm asking is, as we talk about solutions and pulling our people together, if the entertainers don't give their money to the white foundation and they create their own foundation, and through their foundation, whether it's a 501c3 or not, it doesn't have to be, but through that foundation, they create wealth first for their family, then the community. Two or three powerful foundations by a couple of these quarterbacks in the city would literally change that city. If they bring the money in right and do the right thing in that city for those young people, erect educational edifices, erect educational powerhouses. We can eliminate the sororities and fraternities. We're too far behind. I think we need to utilize the churches. If the churches can pull together and go after major real estate projects, then that's success. Let's work with that. I think we need to, if the churches have been in the country for 200-300 years and the black historical colleges have been on the ground for 200-300 years, we cannot bypass them to go do a new thing. We're going to go do a new thing, and we're going to try to do it without the edifices that's set up for us in our community. We just got to go back in there and control. We got to get the church doors open 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, and not just 2 hours, 2 days a week for 2 or 3 hours. Those are our churches. And if we don't flood in there and make recommendations, then – you know, shame on us as a people. If some of our grandparents, great parents, saved up dollars to build some of these churches and to send some of the preachers to school, and if that's a part of our 400-year history, that's what our grandparents have done, then we need to make sure that those buildings are not the worst-looking buildings in the community. We got to go back in there and make sure we're beautifying those things that belong to us, the black church and the black college. And from there, we set a powerful foundation. And we get these entertainers and celebrities to understand, don't give your money to other people's foundations when we've got foundations in our community and we know what to do with this money. And if so, if we employ them to come back home with their money, and we'll be able to monitor it and see it, don't give it secretly. We don't need them giving money secretly. Well, I give money, but I don't tell. Fully on not telling nobody. Bring that money on back home and put it up on you don't take a light and put it under a bushel. We put it and let our light shine. So other people can see, and other people can say, that's what I'm going to do with it too. I'm going to bring it back to the community, and I'm going to let my money shine. And so what I'm saying is, and if we could talk about that just for a second, the power of foundation. Have we missed that? Do we need to rally around setting up stronger foundation?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here. Yes, absolutely, Dr. Cannon. To your point on foundations, we have absolutely missed foundations as a people, and our white conservatives, you know, philanthropists, they utilize the foundation really as their tax shelters. This is how they actually evade legally not paying taxes. And take, for example, the Bill and Melinda Gates. They're going through a divorce right now. What is the one thing, the largest asset, you might say, that has to be settled? Is a $50 billion foundation. They have a $50 billion foundation that has to be settled. So within a foundation, what we don't understand as a people is that, yes, it becomes a tax.
Real quickly, Dr.
Because
Lee,
it's
somebody,
a, and then because it's a 501c3. Pardon me? What's going on?
I was saying, everybody put your phone on mute. Put your phone on mute.
Okay, thank you. So what they're doing is they're building businesses, for-profit organizations under the umbrella of the 501c3. This is what they're doing. This is why, yes, I promote these foundations. I build foundations. It's so extremely important. Yeah, we do trust to an extent, but your best, your very best shelter is a private family or private period foundation. How, if it wasn't the best choice, why would they have $50 billion there? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We're kind of wrapping it up. We've got to wrap it up. But I do want to remind our listening audiences to you still have time to tap one on your phone and give us your comment or question. We're going to go back to Mr. Dorian so you can comment on any and all of these questions and comments. You will be the last person to speak tonight, but I would like to hear your response, particularly to these foundations, and then we'll go to Dr. Cannon to give his final comments for tonight. And I want to thank our audience that did contribute, the medical doctor.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. These vehicles of sheltering, holding, orchestrating, and managing our wealth are very critical. First of all, for us to understand it. You know, don't learn about it once you sign the contract in the first round draft. You know what I'm saying? We want to learn. We need to be talking about these vehicles at very early ages, hopefully aspiring to have one ourselves. But yes, we can put a foundation together. We have the ability, or there's enough of us to do that. And that foundation can be specifically for our ability to build wealth inside of our own communities. So that's a great comment. I'd love if you had just a show on the different mechanisms of how to hold our wealth. I didn't know they had a $50 billion foundation. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We can start that show with that today. You can go live every Saturday at 11 o'clock, and you can go live, you can host that show, and we can have folk call into that show, and you can inspire them, set those chapters in. That way we get people listening in every city. They can set a youth chapter, an entrepreneurial real estate empowerment chapter in their city, and we'll set a radio show up with them so as they start talking about it on their radio show, and you meet with them the night before they show on a conference call to give them some bullet points, then that way you can speak in the heart of young men all across the country. One of the things in speaking to foundations that I did see a company by the name of the Jacobs Center in San Diego, California. The white gentleman was an engineer. He made all of his money through building bridges. When he retired, he set up a foundation called the Jacobs Center in San Diego, my hometown. And what he did was, this was a white gentleman, he put it in the middle of the black community, and he funded it $6-7 million each year, and they bought up real estate property up under the nonprofit, up under the foundation, up under the Jacobs Center. They bought up dilapidated properties. They put in businesses. They made those businesses profitable in the community. And then they allowed the people in the community to be shareholders in those businesses. The business was set up. The property was purchased through the foundation at the nonprofit. But the for-profit businesses, they brought in businesses, major corporations to occupy some of that land, but they also continued to develop land all over the city, and that endowment continued to grow as long as those properties and businesses was profitable, and they made the people, so many people in the community, was to be able to buy into the shares of those businesses. So they set it up so as these businesses went up, the people was able to invest in those businesses as they went up in the community. And so I think that was a beautiful format. I had the opportunity to get close with the Jacobs Center. I seen what they were doing, and I wondered, wow, why can't more of the celebrities, entertainers, why can't we do that across the country and buy up that vacant property, develop it into some beautiful businesses, and then vet the community into those businesses, sir?
Mr. Dorian.
Let's make it happen. Yeah,
yeah, we can. We can do it.
I am. I'm very aware of what he's sharing, and I do think this is a great time to make that happen. We just need it structured, and I think that's where you would come in, Dr. Mary Lee, and of course, some deals to be funded. You know, what specifically would this foundation be responsible to do? And I think we've got enough talent and skills throughout throughout the country, both to fund it and to bring projects worthy of being funded by this type of mechanism. So I'm in. Now, about that Saturday hosting the show, I don't know about that, Dr. Cannon. I don't know about that. But whatever I can do, I can be it.
The man said, "If I give you an empty building, would you know what to do with it? Would you have
oh, absolutely.
To know what to do with an empty? If God said, 'I'm gonna give you this empty building, and it ain't gonna cost you nothing,' and all you have to do is come with some vision to make it work. If I gave you a radio show on Saturday morning, would you know what to say if the music stopped and you was the host?" If
oh, absolutely.
Had the first words and the last words of the show for an hour, and when the music stopped, would you know what to say on Saturday morning?
Oh, absolutely. So we can
that's
have
all,
that discussion.
That's all we need. That's all we need.
I
thank
love
you so
that.
Much.
Thank you, bro. Yes.
Thank
all right,
you
Dr.
So
Mary
much.
Lee.
Yes, yes. Okay,
I'm
I want
to
thank thank you so very much for joining us tonight. I want to thank all of our callers, all of our listeners, and so thank you so much to Dr. Cannon. Hopefully that you, I think you did wrap it up. So if you will wrap it up for us tonight, Sir Dorian, it would be great.
Well, listen, I appreciate this opportunity, and I'm believing somebody heard us. And I look forward to working with you, Dr. Mary Lee. And thank you
and
so much. Love you.
You're very welcome. If you provide your contact information one more time.
Absolutely. Forgive me. I was trying to eat dinner before it gets too late over here. But my email is dorian@teamhusa.com. You can always visit our website, www.teamharvusa.com. And for those of you who might want to give us a call, you can reach us at 1-800-9-HARVEY. I'm sorry, 1-855-9-HARVEY, 855-9-HARVEY. And I will make time, especially if you're interested in coming into the city of Detroit or in Southeast Michigan, or if you have a project in your own town. I have young, aggressive, visionary black developers. We can jump on the plane and be there with the proper notice. So, Dr. Mary Lee, thank you so much. I'm with you, sister. I will be leaving my contact information. I'm looking at your website now, seeing how I can sign up. But nonetheless, okay. I hope to do business with you soon.
Absolutely. And thank you so very much. And we appreciate you, appreciate all of our hosts and our guests and listening audience. This is Dr. Mary Lee Live saying stay safe until next week. God bless you all.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you don't never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm wanting to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?